Hey, I know you're probably driving or running or cleaning the house or doing something else when you're listening to this, but look, if you're a B2B marketer and you need to start generating revenue from your marketing, then you have to check out our 12-week program, the B2B Incubator. It's built for small, in-house B2B marketing teams with limited time and budget. We give you the strategy, the templates, and the tools to start driving revenue, not just leads. So if you're ready to act on all the advice Kevin and I give you, next time you take that first sip of coffee in the morning, make sure you head to the B2B Incubator and apply now. There's only 10 spots available per cohort, with our next one launching at the end of May 2024. Remember, the B2B Incubator, apply now so you don't miss out. We've had B2B marketing managers, CMOs, marketers in demand gen roles, content leads, and more all go through this program, and they're currently executing the demand strategies that they've created. Some are now even contributing as much as 80% of the pipeline to their business after working through it. Make sure you check out the b2bincubator.com and apply now to start driving more demand and more revenue for your brand. Okay, let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to the B2B Playbook podcast. Each week we discuss strategies and tactics to help B2B businesses grow online.
We're your hosts, Kevin and George, a couple of digital marketing professionals. We've waded through the noise and made the mistakes so you don't have to.
The B2B world has changed, and you need to put your customers at the heart of your marketing.
We'll cover how you can use our framework, the 5 B's, to create a brand that customers are ready to buy from, love, and advocate for.
We'll get insights from successful people in the industry and cover the latest trends to keep you on the cutting edge of the B2B world.
If you're interested in B2B marketing strategies and tactics that work, then this podcast is for you.
Subscribe to get the latest from the B2B Playbook first.
Remember, successful B2B marketing starts with the buyer.
Welcome back to the B2B Playbook. Listeners, viewers, this week's interview is with Lucy Sonta. Lucy is a LinkedIn veteran and is the product marketing manager of APAC at no other than LinkedIn. She was so generous with her time and knowledge, Kev, beyond sharing some great tips about how to make B2B marketing more successful. And spoiler alert, it's a lot to do with deeply understanding your customers and getting aligned with sales and leadership. It's always fun to get some sneaky looks under the hood of such a big organization in the B2B marketing space and how they go about doing the same go-to-market activities that we're all doing.
Yes, her three benefits from being in sales before marketing was also very interesting. And they were discovery, customer language, and empathy. All those are very, very important points in our books. And it's another area, product marketing, where all the things we talk about seem to be playing into the same stream of knowledge of concepts and of that same framework that we've been talking about in the 5 B's. So here's that conversation with Lucy.
Welcome back to the B2B Playbook. Listeners, as you know, we rarely have guests on our show. Instead, we select a few true experts who align with our view that B2B marketing is more about people, not platforms. Today, our special guest is Lucy Sonta. Lucy is a LinkedIn veteran and is a product marketing manager at APAC of LinkedIn. LinkedIn plays such a big role in B2B, so who better to have on the podcast to share their own approach to B2B demand gen marketing than someone from within the company? Lucy has been both on the sales side and the marketing side, which in my view makes for some of the best marketers. I'm very excited to have her on today. Lucy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, George. Oh my gosh, what an intro. Pressure's on. Hopefully I deliver. Yeah, well, good.
Yeah, look, the goal of every introduction is to try and do something that someone can share with their parents. Mm-hmm. As marketers, I feel like we're constantly trying to justify to other people what it is that we do. And so hopefully there's a little soundbite there for you to take away.
I love it. Thank you. Really, like a nice little present for me. Well, fantastic.
That's right. Lucy, look, you've been in the belly of the beast at LinkedIn for nearly 6.5 years at this point. You've had roles on the sales side and the marketing side. I'd love to know, just to kick things off, what skills do you think you picked up as a salesperson that have made you a better marketer?
It's a good question. I think, like, for starters, I think I'm like 10 times better marketer having been on the sales side, even though I love this marketing side a lot more than the sales side. Don't tell the salespeople. But there's a couple of things that come to mind in this area. So the first for me is like discovery, which is such a big part of the sales role. And it's asking more questions, doing more research before making a decision. And I feel like that's really, really imperative to what I do as a marketer and how I'm successful as a marketer. I know we do a lot of research in marketing, but just asking more questions, like not falling back on my own expertise and kind of digging deeper a little bit more to fully understand what's going on is really hugely helpful. The second one that came to mind there is all around customer language as well. So speaking in the customer language, I get so caught up, especially LinkedIn. We have so many like LinkedIn-isms of like how we internally speak. And so you're going to have to catch me if I go LinkedIn, like to LinkedIn on this today, call me out on it. But like just speaking in the customer language, taking a step back out of the marketing language and going back into how am I going to get this to resonate is something you have to do a lot from a sales side to be able to get your pitches across. Speaking the customer language is a really big one. And the last one, which isn't quite, I don't know if it's really answering a question, but it's a really big one from both the sales and marketing, is empathy. I know exactly what our teams are doing from a sales side, and I know how hard their jobs are. And so coming to every interaction with them and with customers with a little bit more empathy is really helpful to be able to make me more successful in getting both of things done for both of our sides of the organization. So they're the big three: discovery, customer language, empathy.
Wow. I love that. I love that big three. I think the first two were things that I perhaps expected you to say. I feel like for a lot of marketers, they're just a little afraid to get off their bums and go and speak to customers. And as sales, if you don't do that, then you're not doing your job. And that's one reason why I think marketers or salespeople make such great marketers, because they're just not afraid to get off their bums and get out from behind their dashboards and go and speak to people. And as you said, use the customer's words. And what about that other part that you mentioned there, the empathy? Is that something that you wish that perhaps like maybe do marketers need to have a little bit more sales training experience? Do they need to go and live a day in the life as a salesperson to understand what things are like for them at the coalface?
Yeah, maybe. I think it's been helpful, like in any kind of role, no matter if it's sales and marketing or if it's a different kind of partnership, understanding a little bit more about what the other person is doing and going through and what their role actually entails is always going to be more beneficial for you. But it also helps you get things done. Like, so outside of just like understanding, my relationship with the sales teams are a little bit stronger. Granted, I know them because I used to be in a lot of their teams, but even the ones that I talk from a global level, who I definitely didn't know when I was in the sales side, I feel like our interactions are a little bit more genuine and authentic because I can come to a place of understanding of what they're coming from versus what I'm coming from and meet in the middle ground as well. So hugely helpful for everybody.
I love that. It's like almost the same process, whether you're trying to get external buy-in for someone to buy your product or internal buy-in. It all just starts with understanding whoever it is that stakeholder is and using the language and showing them that you get where they're coming from and meeting them somewhere in the middle.
Exactly.
Now, Lucy, you're a product marketing manager for APAC, and I know a lot of listeners are probably thinking, oh, LinkedIn have tons of resources, but there's actually only two of you in APAC. So you probably actually share a lot of the same challenges that our listeners do of being a regional marketer that's actually attached to a global behemoth. So what are some of those challenges that you face there being I don't want to say a barnacle attached to the whale, but a smaller part as part of a much bigger team?
It's like there's certainly challenges. There would be advantages as well, I think. And you're right, we have two in APAC. There's quite a few outside of APAC. So we have quite a large North America team, and then there's some based in Europe as well. But just two of us flying the flag in APAC. There are so many things that are challenging, which I'm sure that anyone is like who's part of a global team will recognize and relate to. The first one, which is so simple, but it's the bane of my existence, is time zones. That is just, I hate time zones so much. It's really hard to be able to get things done. And there's a lot of like time zone maths that are as required in my job. But outside of that, I think the thing that time zones make it really challenging with as a regional marketer in a global team is like you have to have really strong relationships with the people outside of your time zone to be able to make that ask for them to come to the table and do meetings with you outside of their hours. So you both end up flexing, but you do actually have to have that relationship as well. So that one's a real big challenge. I don't think we're ever going to fix time zones, but there's certainly ways to make it a bit easier. And then global visibility is another one that's really challenging. So getting consistency to the table, obviously knowing APAC as a region, there are so many different markets, there's so many different cultures. So it's really, really important that we're representing our region in whenever decisions are being made from a product and marketing point of view. No fault at all, but it just sometimes is that if you're not there, again, in that time zone, in that meeting, if it's a midnight your time or something and you can't join it, it's really challenging to make sure that you're always top of mind. And so getting consistency to the table, making sure that that visibility is there is really challenging. But there's also advantages, right? Like the advantages from our side, it really sits within our region. From an APAC perspective, we really have high visibility. So there's two of us, we're really close to our leaders from a sales and cross-functional side. So they come to us for everything, anything product, which is really great. So we get a lot of inputs into decision-making and strategic. There's like pros and cons, like it's all about navigating it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on the time zone challenge. I think maybe 10 times a day I'm Googling what is 7:30 a.m. Australian time in London or whatever, and constantly trying to align my calendar with other people. That's a huge battle. But as you said, at least there's that pro of you guys being a little bit smaller and probably getting to have a lot more alignment with your sales team. And that's something I want to get into later. But before we get there, I think now people, now they're listening and they realize that you, just like every other marketer, there is ultimately going to be a battle with resources. And so I'd love to know, how do you pick and prioritize that battle that you have for resources, and what to prioritize next?
Yeah, the answer is really carefully, like really thoughtfully is how we pick our resources and how we use our bandwidth. But it has evolved over time, I would say, coming from a sales background and then moving into the product space. When I first jumped into PMM, I really wanted to be everything to everyone because I really wanted to be like the PMM that I needed all of the time. But as you can imagine, that is a pretty quick way to burn out. So that was not very feasible to survive on for very long. But now I think we're in a really good place in terms of, like, of course, we would love more resources, but we are all about leverage. And so we are much more about scaled approaches, more with less. We over-index on doing a lot of partnerships with our other teams. So not necessarily just sales, but if we have our operations team or our channel team or our agency team, like there's all different teams that we've built relatively strong relationships with so that we can leverage them as well. So it's like an extended team, even though there's only two of us. It also means, from being so resource constrained, that we have to be so aligned with our leaders and our leadership team in region. So they need to be fully bought in on what we're spending our time on and see the impact that we're driving. But that also helps us understand where they can pull us in, or helps them understand where they can pull us in to add more value. So it goes both ways, but we're really particular and guarded about our time now, which has evolved a lot in the last few years.
All right, folks, quick breather here. In my time in B2B marketing, generally I've come to realize that there are just certain tools that can be an absolute game changer. And that's why I'm really excited to talk about LeadFeeder. It's a tool that helps you cut through the data and turn those website visitors into solid leads and opportunities for your business. LeadFeeder shows you which companies are checking out your site, tracking their behavior, and it integrates all of this with your CRM. And the result is it's basically like a secret weapon for targeted lead engagement, and it really makes it easier for your team to convert website traffic into sales. Head to leadfeeder.com, give it a free demo, and you'll also get a free extended premium trial when you let the rep know that you found out about LeadFeeder through the B2B Playbook podcast. That's leadfeeder.com. Okay, check it out. Back to the show. I love that you mentioned alignment there, and not just alignment with sales, but leadership as well. And I think we're probably going to get to that a little bit later when we talk about that sales and marketing alignment and using those resources as efficiently as possible. But before we go there, I want to start like earlier in that marketing journey. Everything you said from the outreach of this conversation, everything starts with understanding who your customer is. And as a product marketing manager, someone who's been in sales, I'd love to know that for you guys, like, what is the importance of getting insights directly from the customers themselves? What does that do for you guys?
It's a game changer, I think. Like, it's not rocket science, but it's really hugely important. And I think from a marketing perspective, and I've fallen into this before as well, like, we often rely on our own expertise, which is really valid in terms of all of the research that we've done on great marketing strategies, and in terms of form and delivery, it's really helpful. But until we have customer research backing our strategy, it's always going to fall flat or not hit the potential that we want it to hit. And I know from our side, like, some of the hardest go-to-markets that we've done have been because we didn't get enough customer feedback to begin with. So we made it harder on ourselves. But in the same way, we've had some really hard ones, like change management pieces that I thought were just going to be like absolutely awful to try and navigate through. But again, because we had so much customer insights and we'd done all that customer feedback to begin with, it actually ended up being a bit more of a breeze. So it's interesting. It's like, definitely the customer insights, customer feedback are just hugely important.
And do you guys have a particular methods of collecting those insights from customers? Are you literally going out and visiting them? Are you talking to sales who are talking to customers? How are you guys typically collecting those insights?
All of the above. So we have a team based in the US, but they do global research that go out and do lots of research with our customers, whether it's surveys, whether it's emails. Sometimes it's a bit more one-to-one. Our sales teams are constantly giving us feedback, especially around any like launches or product updates or anything. We're constantly getting feedback from them. But my favorite way is just going and talking to customers, because I feel like you get like that unfiltered version of what you're actually talking about or what they're wanting to portray in their challenges. That's my favorite way. It's not always as feasible because, again, bandwidth and time. But if there's an opportunity or if there's a project that's large enough to validate that, I love just going and setting up quick connects with customers and just finding out straight from them what they think.
Yeah, I used to be so guilty of just diving through Google Analytics reports and looking at the data and just guessing what people wanted and what people were thinking. And you would just say, oh, we think that this is what they want. Let's put some money behind it and test it. Mm-hmm. And I can put my hand up and say that was the wrong approach. And it's what most people do today. And they just waste so many resources. And it's just incredible what people will tell you if you just ask them. Like, that first customer interview is a little intimidating, but it's intoxicating once you realize the power of literally just asking someone a question and getting their answer from it.
Oh, for sure. And the data is valid for sure in terms of something to help. But I think of it as a really great starting off period. It's like, that's the quantity, and then you build the quality on top of it. And the other great thing that like customer insights and feedback does, it's just like such a great tool to go back to your sales teams on as well. So if you've got thinking about change management, or if there's a product that you're trying to position internally, having some customer quotes that you've been able to get from interviews, like, it just goes so much further than some of our own data as well. They play hand in hand, but yeah, huge benefits all the way across go-to-market strategies.
So is that something that you guys will regularly do then? So say a product is released by LinkedIn, it's now coming to APAC. Will you then go and look at, let's get some insights from customers directly, and then use that to maybe slightly update our positioning, maybe our messaging off the back of that?
Yeah, we like to do it before that process. So usually we'll have different stages of customer feedback. There'll be ones like as they're building and iterating the project, like the product. So if they know that they've got a product coming up, they'll often get some customer feedback. Again, depending on the scope and importance to APAC, we might lean in there, or it might be globally run. And then when we're doing our alphas and betas, the customers who are actually on those and testing the products, they'll be the ones that'll be giving that product feedback. And they will be, it's our product teams that will then be updating and iterating the product as they're using it based on their feedback. So that's part of it. But we also do things like customer advisory boards as well. So if we have a broader category that we want to delve into, and AI is absolutely like the one that's top of mind for everyone at the moment, but also like measurement is a really big one. We'll bring together a group of our customers or our key accounts and a couple of different companies and listen and hear like broader feedback from them to help us shape the future direction of where we should be going from a product perspective. So it's all different elements of it, depending on the need and where we're at.
Well, there you go. Customer advisory boards, they're an amazing way to collect those insights and get buy-in at the same time. You're trying to provide something of value to the people who are giving you those insights as well. We haven't done a lot of it ourselves, but we had Taylor Boga on the podcast a couple of months ago, and she's head of customer marketing at Apollo. Apollo is like a big outbound tool, and she's setting up their customer advisory boards there, and she did a fantastic job with it at Chili Piper beforehand, and she just had so many insights around that, and I can see why they would be so valuable. And then for you guys at LinkedIn, I can imagine it would be a no-brainer to get invited by LinkedIn to be part of a customer advisory board. Are there any particular benefits that you guys spruik around why you should be part of that customer advisory board?
I hope it's exciting. I think the giving feedback from a LinkedIn perspective, and because our customer advisory boards are full of some of our key stakeholders from a lot of our like managed key accounts, they want to be able to give that feedback and shape it because they're the ones using our products. It varies from board to board. So, and they do a relatively regular one in North America. They do one in New York and one in San Francisco. And they bring together that group. To be honest, one of the big benefits is the ability for those marketing leaders to all meet with each other. So yes, they love meeting with LinkedIn and our leaders, but also you've got these really senior stakeholders across all these different marketing businesses who have so many different insights they can learn from each other. That's a perk in itself. From a local level, we did like I wouldn't quite call it a customer advisory board, probably like a one-off customer advisory board, which kind of isn't quite the same thing, but in the same kind of vein. We did one in India at the end of last year. And so we brought together a group of about 12 of our stakeholders who were in the region. We put on a big lunch for them and did a whole, like lots of little swag things and everything. Yeah, everyone loves LinkedIn swag. But again, the benefit of that was purely like when we got all the feedback, they loved being able to be there in the room talking to their peers really candidly, talking to our leaders who often aren't in the region as often. So anytime that they are here, we like to get them in front of our customers. Just being able to be heard, listened to, and make valuable feedback that makes a change to our like future product and trajectory, I think is really valuable.
Yeah, so there's a lot of benefits there for people coming together and facilitating those relationships between those senior marketers, senior leadership people seems to be a really big part of it. And just generally, from what I can see, market education around your products, also around B2B buying behavior as a whole, seems to be a big factor for LinkedIn in terms of your go-to-market strategy. I'd love to go a little bit further into the weeds now into what your go-to-market strategy looks like for one of your products. Would you have an example for us or be able to talk us through one that really comes to mind?
I do. If you'll let me, I have two. I have a local example and a really, like a global example.
That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful,
just,
please.
I just think because it's helpful to understand a little bit more from a regional level, but then I have a bit more of a tactical one from a global level. So the regional one that I'm thinking of is Hindi ads. And so Hindi ads are the ability for a customer to run a paid ad using Hindi. And we already knew that this was like a really big ask from our customers because we had Hindi as a language on the feed for years, but we didn't have that parity in our campaign manager tool, which was not a great customer experience, right? And they can use it like organically, but not paid. And they were getting their ads rejected. So we needed to make a change. We already knew that it was something that they wanted. We did a lot of customer research in the lead up to it, but we also did a lot of sales and agency research purely because it's like a language update rather than a specific product update. So it was really important for us to be able to position this correctly. And what we did After our researchers, we worked really closely with our business operations team, who were really imperative to helping us understand a little bit more about our customers. Like, we're talking about bringing in the data side now. I guess this is why that side is still really important. They brought in our customers who were in Hindi-speaking states, and we ensured that we could go to our teams and really give them a clear indication of who this like update was actually for. Because the big thing to remember, certainly at LinkedIn, is that our APAC market and our customers that we look after are really highly international. And so they are often marketing outside of their like country. So it would be not uncommon that a customer in Australia is marketing to India. And therefore, it's really important for us to educate not only our customers, but also our teams on how to drive success from those areas when it's outside their market. So we did a lot of education there. We paired a lot of the insights that we got from a customer research side, but also from the business operations data side with best practices. We had a geo list of locations to use because obviously not everywhere in India speaks Hindi. And so it was really important that we didn't get a customer, remember, in like the south of India who doesn't speak Hindi, getting a Hindi ad, like that wasn't going to be a great member experience. Caveats about when to use Hindi and when not to use Hindi, because it's not always the business language. So being really particular about that, all these nuances came up in our research phase that we didn't know of, and it was really highly important for us to be able to get that. And then from an external point of view, because it was a regional launch, this is where we had to get really clever about leverage, because again, we're big, only two people, but we're big on leverage. We partnered with a lot of our teams, like our own marketing teams that are in the LinkedIn page. And so they did lots of posts on the page for us. And then we also did a lot of work with our agency education team in terms of scale. Like, agency is such a great way to be able to get that scale message out there. And they had existing webinars that helped us really drive a lot more scale. So we didn't have to set anything new, net new up. We were able to leverage all the things that were happening like in our surrounding world. So that's from a local level. And I appreciate that was probably a bit longer than I anticipated.
But no, that was fantastic. I love diving into the weeds. You really worked hard to obtain those customer insights, both from people, I suppose, who are going to be like seeing the ads, but then those who are going to be actually running the ads in Hindi themselves.
For sure.
Then you had to put all the materials, all the guidance around it, and then the actual education of this is how you go and use this new product feature or this new language within this product feature. You said you did that education by posting on socials, right? And then through webinars with agency partners. Is that right?
Yeah, because it was a smaller launch in terms of a regional launch, and it's only impacting certain customers. So it's not like it's a product that's coming out that every customer in APAC can use. We didn't have as much resourcing available to use for us. So it was all about leverage and partnership from a regional side. From a global side, it's very different. For our global side, the example that comes to mind for go-to-market is our LinkedIn audience network, which anytime anyone hears audience network, like flags go off, like in general, like it's not a LinkedIn thing, it's just a general marketing thing. But for people who don't know, the audience network or our audience network is the ability to target LinkedIn, same audience, so exact same LinkedIn target audience, exact same LinkedIn members, but off platform, which is often a really like high friction sell for our teams. And so a couple of years ago, we decided we wanted to like relaunch this. The adoption wasn't quite there, but we saw so much value in it. And we had to do a lot of customer research on this one from a global side. But the interesting thing for this one, actually, if we're going back to customer research and the importance there, is that when we did all this customer research and spoke to so many different customers, we actually found out that performance wasn't the problem. It was awareness. So the customers themselves were like, oh yeah, we just didn't know this existed. We'll be willing to try it. Whereas when we went to our sales teams, they were all, our performance is the issue. It can't do this, it can't do that. So it was like a real big change management thing. And we had to go back to foundations. A lot of myth busting with our teams of actually product doesn't operate like this anymore. So it was like a completely different experience.
That's super interesting. My inherent distrust of the like any audience network definitely came from the Google days with their audience network. We always found that the quality was just way lower in terms of like where our ads were being run. From a performance perspective, they were never quite as good. But people use LinkedIn for different things. So I'm very curious as to how you guys tackled that problem to try and overcome that hurdle.
Yeah. I mean, I think like first and foremost, and again, this is probably from my sales days as well, is like I'm just a very big fan of transparency and being really clear about what, like if something is for someone or if it isn't for someone. So like best fit is just so top of mind for me all the time. And so we led a lot with that in terms of who is this for? Who is it not for? What objectives see the most success? So the way you set up campaigns in LinkedIn is you choose your objective and there's specific ones that work really well for a LinkedIn audience network and some that don't. And so we just were really like clear and transparent with the team about that. One of my favorite things that we did to drive a little bit more engagement, because not only is it a high friction sell, it's sometimes like a really can be a little bit more of a slodge to try and get interested in an audience network, especially when you're talking to sales teams who are being pulled in a lot of different directions. We sent them a conversation ad on LinkedIn. So that's like a decision tree kind of ad. It appears in the inbox and it allows them to interact with the content. And so we sent them a myth busting one that was like, you think audience network? Think again. And they had to do a little true or false quiz before we did any training with them. And that was like the biggest thing that helped get engagement in the session. Like it was so helpful to be able to get them like rethinking mindset shift, changing how they're thinking about it, which was probably the key to unlocking a lot of this product being successful, because they needed to be engaged with it first before they were willing to actually go and talk to their customers about it. From the product perspective, like one of the things we heard from customers, and this won't be a surprise, is we're living in such a privacy conscious world. And so we had to be really upfront about transparency and control levers, which we weren't doing. Well, we had it, but we just weren't being as vocal about it. So a lot of our like external pieces had that first and forefront. And the other thing, again, big on leverage, we worked with a lot of our teams, like our internal insights teams, to build metrics into their platforms so that when our sales teams wanted to pull more performance metrics, they could get really specific about it and therefore prove the performance side back to themselves, but also their customers as well. So that was all the things that we did. And that was even before we went out to customers. So there was like so much that we had to do from an internal marketing perspective before we went out to customers. And then from there, it was actually quite straightforward and simple once we got to the customer side, because we'd done all of this work. But we played off the mark, like the myth busting aspect for our external customers as well. So really challenging some of those ideas. We did a lot of agency workshops, webinars, case studies across all markets. It was a really big priority for us. This was obviously not overnight. It actually took like literally years to be able to get to where we are now from where we started. But we've seen in APAC adoption grow like exponentially in line to where our GTM efforts were. So it was really great that you could track when we started this process and this like relaunch to years, like a year later, year and a half later, and you could see the adoption grow. So such a huge amount. It was really validating to all the things that we've done. Bit of a longer example, but certainly from a global level, like that's a global initiative, works a little bit differently to regional.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic insight and good to know like how you guys actually track it. I suppose that adoption there, that's as close to like revenue and impact as you'll get. And as you've indicated, it does take some time to see that. That is something that I think all of our listeners really struggle with, is often the efforts that are made today are going to take time to see on the balance sheet later. Were there any other metrics that or anything that you guys look for in the interim to know, hey, this actual campaign that we're getting out there that's delivering this information, this is starting to make impact or this is on the right track?
Yeah, for sure. So adoption was like the first and easiest one for us to look at because it's purely a product play. But we also looked at the amount of revenue as a whole that LinkedIn Audience Network was driving for us and how that increased over time. So we could tie it back to revenue, which was really exciting for this one. Can't necessarily do it for all of our products, but and this one specifically, this is why this made such a splash, because it was like such a huge increase from a revenue perspective. The other piece, I guess, is like looking at success metrics as well. So like a bit harder to do, but more because we were educating the teams a little bit more about how to set up a successful campaign and like the ways to go about it and what content to use and what to look out for. we're able to see the performance of this product actually increase over time as well, right? So like the benchmarks that we were measuring against and what that looked like, what a successful campaign looked like, we could look at it from that side too. So there was a whole heap of different areas that we could touch on. I remember when we used to report back to our leaders, we used to say, we used to do adoption as the big one, revenue as a whole, how much of our revenue had increased compared to what it was of compatible objectives. But then we also used to look at things like cost compared to feed as well. So like having a land campaign and a feed campaign at the same time, what does that do to your customers' results and metrics and things like that? So whole heap of different ways. Again, this is certainly not that we could do it for all of our products. That would be the absolute dream if we could, but there were some really tangible tactical ways that we could measure back on the results of this go-to-market. It'd be helpful.
And I guess that's a good reminder for all our marketers that your job doesn't end once the product gets in your customers' hands. Actual activation, using the product, getting the most out of it, retention, expansion, they're also all within a marketer's remit. And for small teams, like a lot of our listeners, like yourself, that kind of falls into your hands as well. And sometimes that can be lower hanging fruit than constantly trying to acquire new customers and filling what is effectively a leaky bucket. So I can definitely see how valuable that work is in pulling it all together and working hard after that initial adoption of the product. Sure. The B2B Institute, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have seen it, maybe read a little bit about it. I definitely read a lot of what comes out of the B2B Institute. It is LinkedIn's, I would say, like main pillar of education. It's a research arm that are owned by you guys. It's not necessarily there to spruik LinkedIn's own products, but actually provides research and insights on B2B buying behavior and trends. It's, in my view, like completely reflective of what our own approach and belief is in what marketing should be, which is help people become better at their job even before they use your product and service and you're on your way to building a good relationship with them. But I'd love to hear from you if you have a feeling from being in LinkedIn, like why does LinkedIn continue to invest in the B2B Institute?
Oh, it's a good question. I think you've nailed and summed it up quite well. But like from my side, and I remember when B2B Institute started up. I was still in the sales team. So when it was all fresh and I was pretty new to LinkedIn at the time because they've been around for a while. And I remember the team who runs the B2B Institute, they used to send out a few of their leads and do like a world tour. And they used to come and talk to our sales team and talk to a couple of our customers. And they would come out and they would present the B2B trends. So I think that's still going today. It's like the B2B trends for majority marketers. And it was just like such a highlight and so refreshing to hear B2B talked about in a really engaging and interesting way. And I think that's the first thing for me of like B2B can sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes feel a little bit like a little bit more dull than B2C, like in terms of marketing. And so hearing like the B2B Institute and what they're talking about in terms of trends, it was just always engaging and really like inspiring. So I think that's one aspect of it. But I think from a LinkedIn side, like at the end of the day, like we are the B2B marketing platform, right? Like we are in a position to bring together not just our research and our expertise, but also the experts that we partner with. So there's a whole heap of different external experts that we partner with, like Bene and Field and Mark Ritson and Jenny Rumenak. And I think like the bringing together of those experts is really important for the community that we're trying to build from an advertising perspective. But yeah, I think, look, to be honest, at the end of the day, you nailed it right at the top in terms of we want marketers to succeed, right? Like we want them to be successful and we want them to drive the best performance possible. And so the B2B Institute is really like an accessible, inspiring resource to get marketers on the right track, like right off the bat is really where I think that we come from.
Yeah, it's a fantastic resource. I think it's definitely fulfilling that job. And I love, as you said, you brought together these subject matter experts, people like Mike Ritson, who are almost like celebrities in our world, and bring a whole community with them as well that not only like further validates who the B2B Institute is, but brings that audience with them as well. It's a fantastic approach. I look forward to seeing how it keeps evolving. Back to sales and marketing alignment, I hinted at the top that I wanted to talk about this more. You've been on the marketing side and the sales side, so I think you probably have some unique insights there. When you were in the sales side, what kind of support did you wish that you had from marketing that maybe just wasn't quite there?
I'm exposing myself now. I think if I'm thinking back to when I'm a salesperson, it was probably product visibility is the thing that I wanted the most then. And I think I touched on earlier of like, it sits around that empathy side of there's so much that's going on from a salesperson's perspective. So I think it's really easy for us to get in the mindset of when I'm approaching a salesperson or a sales team, I'm the like, they should be listening to me because I have something important to say. But in reality, they're getting that message from us. They're getting it from the development side. They're getting it from their clients. They're getting it from another training that they have to do. They're getting it from industry insights they're supposed to be across. So there is so much going on in their worlds and we're only a certain part of it. And so from a sales side, it was one of the things I really wanted was a quick, easy, accessible way for me to like understand what I actually need to know and what I need to care about rather than all of the noise that was going on. And we've done a little bit on this. I think the one thing we've done that's been really helpful, I remember when I was right before I moved into the PMM world and I was working with my now manager who was taking kind of me on as like a PMM partner, like project perspective while I was trying to decide this is the area that I wanted to jump into. And we started up this optional Teams channel because we're owned by Microsoft, so everything is Teams. So we started up this optional Teams channel for all of APAC LinkedIn marketing solutions. So that's like anyone in APAC LinkedIn who works across our advertising business and optional. Like we just put the link out there and we were like, look, we're going to put product updates in here. Maybe this will help in terms of sending, rather than sending a whole heap of emails or bridging the gap of us jumping into every single sales meeting, which was just not like feasible use of our time. But I think it was like the proof is in the pudding in terms of 3 years on from us creating that optional group that was literally just created so that we could digest and let the team know of high level simplified product updates. It now has about 95% of all of APAC in it. And it's like highly engaged. They're constantly tagging each other, liking things, like writing up their own feedback off the back of it. It doesn't require a lot of lift for us, but like clearly it's a really accessible way for them to be able to get the information without having to like drown in emails, I think.
So that like simple sales enablement is a huge issue that so many people are trying to solve. That's an interesting approach to solving it, to have everything in one place for the sales team to stay on top of. Generally, do you have other systems set up to help your marketing and sales team stay close together?
Good question. We've tried a lot of things, I will say. And the Teams channel, I think, is probably the most successful thing that we've had purely because it's an opt-in. And opt-in not only in terms of like they're opting into the channel, but also opting into the time that they want to like look at this channel. Like it's really in their hands. We've done newsletters before. They're fine, but you don't get the engagement that we get, like that we want to, and that one-to-one kind of bit more personal talking back. We do like to liaise and work with our senior leaders of like, when is the really important times for us to be able to jump in and talk to the teams? And so we will still jump in and talk, ask for spots in different team meetings or all hands or things like that, depending on what the product and initiative is, but ties back again to wanting to be really protective of our time and what that looks like and what we're doing and our bandwidth. From a global side, we have a global newsletter that everyone in our LinkedIn marketing solutions org gets. And so we point back to that as the source of truth. This is the one newsletter that has everything that global has all decided that this is the area that we're going to update as a group. And so the sales team know that's their point of call for everything like upcoming. And then if from a regional perspective, if there's anything that they think that we think they should care about, it goes through the Teams channel.
That makes sense. And look, again, it's great that you found a channel that gets that buy-in. And I think the key there is it's opt-in. Mm-hmm. And so when we speak to marketers and they have such a hard time trying to get sales buy-in, My advice is it's going to be so difficult to get all of sales on board working with marketing in one go. So just try and find one salesperson, like one marketer, one salesperson, and just try a working relationship with them. Someone who does see a bit more value or will give you a bit of time to explain the value of marketing and what you can do if you work together, and then prove that out and then roll it out to the rest of the teams. Because I think, like you said, it's got to be opt-in. Otherwise, people just don't want to do it. They've got so much else going on. Do you have any shared goals and metrics that you have with the sales team that you track together?
Oh, they overlap. They overlap quite a lot, but it depends on the project. So if it's like a product push perspective, we'll have metrics that we want to measure on their teams that align to our adoption numbers. Generally, we look at a lot of adoption, but in order to actually break through in terms of getting the buy-in, getting the success shared, we really push to get as many revenue-centered metrics as we possibly can, which does require our sales team, if not our operations team, our sales operations team. And so we work really closely with them to make sure that we're both on the same page, or at least we're sharing metrics across the board so that we can make our readbacks stronger. But even if they don't overlap, I think it's really important for us to just keep across how they're measuring and tracking generally. So there's a lot of things that they'll measure back on in terms of revenue, in terms of gaps, risk planning, or how they're tracking overall, and keeping an eye on that, not necessarily all the time, but just an overall understanding of it is really helpful for us to guide decision-making as well. We have some shared, but I think keeping across each other's goals is really important to drive the most successful future strategies as you can.
So I guess keeping those close feedback loops, having those shared metrics tied all the way down to revenue is super important. If you had a wish list of something that sales and marketing could do together to maybe make that relationship even better, do you have anything on that list?
Oh, I think, to be honest, I think everything comes down to communication, right? Communication in terms of consistency and then in terms of quality. And so that's something I'm really working on from my perspective of the executive communication, simplifying the communication, making it really clear and concise so that the teams get the most out of it. And in the same way, we're talking about feedback loops, talking about wish lists of things we'd love to see. Again, there's only two of us in APAC. We don't know what we don't know. So being able to share that information back and having that consistent loop is just so important for us to be able to advocate for our region. Again, at the end of the day, we're APAC product marketing managers, and therefore our job is to make sure that our region is heard and that feedback is heard. So that communication piece is just so important and constantly evolving as well.
And there you go. And it comes right back down to, again, just understanding people, understanding what's important to them and communicating it properly. Lucy, look, you've just been so generous with your time. LinkedIn, look, it is the B2B platform. I'll give you that. We're huge advocates of it. And so it's been so awesome to see how that's been brought to market locally here in APAC. And I really appreciate you sharing some global examples for us as well. Before we round out the conversation, is there anything else that you'd like to direct our audience's attention to, or anything else that you'd like to add?
Oh, actually, something that I think this audience might find interesting, if you haven't already, this might be common knowledge for a lot of our team, is that we have a LinkedIn program called LinkedIn Marketing Labs. And so it's a certification program. It's free. If you search LinkedIn Marketing Labs, it will come up. But if you're looking at how to get started with LinkedIn, how to start creating best-in-class campaigns, or really what are the best practices, these are small free marketing courses that you can then add onto your LinkedIn profile as well to say you're a LinkedIn expert. But if you wanted to know more about LinkedIn in a free, accessible way, highly recommend looking at LinkedIn Marketing Labs.
Fantastic. We'll make sure we link to that in the show notes. Listeners, make sure you follow Lucy's journey. Lucy, where would you like people to find you?
On LinkedIn, obviously. You can. What? Yeah, no, I would be remiss if I didn't say LinkedIn, obviously. But you can connect with me. I am always happy for new connections because I love seeing marketers in my feed. My name is Lucy Saunter, so it's pretty easy to find. Yeah, connect there and we can move on from there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Lucy. I really appreciate your time.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me, George. Really appreciated it.
Wow, what a lovely conversation, George. Thanks again to Lucy for coming on the show and sharing her expertise with us. Importantly, also sharing that things that drive success at the bigger end of town is actually exactly the same kind of stuff that is applicable across the board. Know your customers, get aligned with your partners and your teams, internal or external, in particular with your internal sales team. And there's nothing better than hearing it direct from the customers, whoever they might be.
And there's so many great resources, Kev, that LinkedIn are putting out there for all of us B2B marketers. From the B2B Marketing Institute, which is a personal favorite of mine, to the LinkedIn Marketing Labs, they're really leading the industry, I feel, in a big way with that helpful content that you and I preach about so often. Not only that, Lucy also shared with us some really interesting examples and considerations in LinkedIn's own go-to-market activities. And listeners, these are some of the key points that we really, really loved. And Kev, you touched on it at the open. It was the three benefits from doing sales before marketing, and that was discovery, customer language, and empathy. And it's amazing, Kevin, how at the end of the day, it all comes back to the customer, deeply understanding your customer, whether that's an internal stakeholder or a person you're trying to win business from.
And as you always say, George, we find that the best marketers are those that came from sales, and Lucy is definitely an example of that. Another great point she made was that with resource constraints, which many of us face, it's important to focus on leverage. And that means leaning into your partnerships, leaning into that alignment with sales and with leadership. All those things are crucial to success. And sometimes it can even be an internal marketing problem. Has your internal team in marketing actually been aligned to the same ideals, the same things that you're all striving towards? Because sometimes you actually just need to educate your own internal team around what are the key objectives for the business and what we're actually pushing for.
And Kev, we're always keen on getting as much measurement in our activities as possible. But I also love their points that efforts made today can really take a long time to see the impact, especially on the balance sheet, all the way down to revenue. But you should absolutely strive to measure the level of impact on revenue and any of the leading indicators to say, hey, revenue isn't here yet, but we are on that correct path. And that's something that we cover quite a lot on the B2B playbook. So go ahead, listeners, go and find Lucy Sontra on LinkedIn. Check out LinkedIn Marketing Labs and the B2B Institute, of course, as well. And look, as always, Kevin and I are just so stoked that more and more of you are joining us each and every Monday by listening to the podcast or watching us on YouTube. And if we could ask one thing, it would be to please pass the show on to someone that might enjoy and get value from it. Or do us one better, leave us a short review on whatever platform it is you listen on or watch us on. It's a huge help to us. It's a huge help to our future listeners, and we'd really, really appreciate it. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you to Lucy. Thank you, listeners. Take care and catch you next week.
Thank you, George. Thank you, Lucy. Thank you, listeners. Take care and catch you all next week.
A quick note before you go, listeners, you can find more great content and get in touch with us at theb2bplaybook.com.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and our newsletter while you're there to get the latest news, tips, and resources from our playbook.
We'll be back the same day and same time with another episode next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the B2B Playbook. Remember, successful B2B marketing starts with the buyer.